Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. It's useful to get some notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. The next series of shows I'd like to embark upon is All Your Worth, The Ultimate Lifetime Money Plan, which I have spent time on years ago, but which I feel is something we need to revisit in light of the challenges in our economy. The book, All Your Worth, is by Elizabeth Warren, who most of you know about now. She is a senator from Massachusetts, the first female senator from that state, and she has been a very important person in dealing with many debt issues, credit card issues, and issues to help the middle class in particular at the governmental level in the last few years. But before that, as a writer and scholar, a professor at Harvard University. She has a number of books, and All Your Worth was written with her daughter, Amelia Warren Tiagi. What I will follow for the most part is her book, All Your Worth, as the textbook in this series. I ended the last show going over, at least starting to go over, the 8 golden rules of money and relationships, which I will continue with now. These are for couples of all kind, those who are already in agreement and also those who are in serious disagreement about money issues. The rules are: what's mine is ours, be truthful and make it easy for your partner to be truthful too, stop playing the blame game, give each other some free money, keep money issues separate from the real stuff, fight fair, divide and conquer, and learn the art of compromise. The very last thing we left with was give each other some free money, which is actually just following the rules regarding wants, dividing that up and each person spending it to their own desires and having no negative feedback about it. That brings us to the 5th rule: keep money issues separate from the real stuff. Sometimes money is the real problem and sometimes it isn't. Sometimes money is just the most familiar weapon available to fight over something entirely different. So in this regard, let's take a self-test. Is it really about money? And of course, as always, these are true or false statements, so follow along. Sometimes my partner buys expensive things for me to make up after a fight, true or false? My partner sometimes uses money as an excuse for not doing something nice for me, like going out for the evening or buying me a birthday present, true or false? No matter how a disagreement starts, it always ends up as a fight about money, true or false? I think an expensive gift is a good way to say I'm sorry, true or false? Money fights seem to come from nowhere. We're talking about something else, and then suddenly we're yelling about money, true or false? Sometimes I spend money when I'm angry with my partner, true or false? And the last one is, sometimes I say we can't afford something when the truth is I just don't want it, true or false? If you marked true for any of these statements, you and your mate have a problem with substituting money for the real issues in your relationship. Picture the last time you had a knockdown, drag-out money fight. What were you feeling before the battle? Was the kitchen a mess? Did your back hurt? Were you mad because you felt your mate doesn't appreciate you? Were you feeling insecure or hurt over something else? Of course, these are honest emotions, and they can figure in even the best relationships. Sometimes the problem isn't even with the relationship, but with something else entirely. Stress at work, a dispute with your brother, worry over aging parents, and on and on. Unfortunately, there is no magic formula to make those bad feelings go away. But substituting money for the real issues won't resolve any of the deeper problems. Worse yet, it can create a bucket of new ones that just compound whatever else is wrong. Here's an example. Ryan and his wife Ellie had fought over money so often that he could recite every accusation from memory on both sides. She'll say, "I blow too much at Green's," the local Irish pub, and I'll say she spends too much on her stupid hair, and then we're off and going like a couple of mad dogs in a thunderstorm. But once they agreed on how much they could both have for free money, the arguments sounded a lot different. So he says, "I hit Green's one night with the guys like usual, and she's furious all over again, harping on how much I blow on beer. And I was about to get all wound up when I just said, 'It was just the cash you said I could have, babe.' And she stares at me, still so mad, I could tell. And then those little tears started to leak out. And I go, 'Why are you mad at me? I thought I'm doing things your way.' And she goes, 'Why is it always them? Why don't you take me out someplace nice, you know? You look at me like I'm some boring old hag, and I just want to be your girl.'" There it was. This fight had never really been about money. It was about whether Ryan was considering Ellie's feelings and whether Ellie was willing to let Ryan have some time on his own. But they had slipped into so many fights about money that neither could find the real issue under all those layers of money, money, money. If every conflict turns into a battle over your finances, try keeping the word money out of your quarrels. Remember, you have made the decision to get your money in balance, and you are getting on the road to a brighter financial future. You have forgotten the past mistakes, and you have decided to put an end to the blame game. You have agreed to give each other some free money, so there is no need to quarrel over the little purchases. At the end of all that, there just shouldn't be very many money issues left to fight about. So go ahead and laugh, live, and even fight, but keep money out of it. You may discover that if money is no longer the first weapon in your arsenal, you get a better understanding about what is really wrong, which means you get a better chance to make things right in your relationship. Moving on to the sixth golden rule. It's fight fair. What happens when money really is what you're fighting about? After all, you have different tastes, different priorities, and you may disagree with your mate's choices. And if you're a normal couple, you will argue about it at least once in a while. But here are some ground rules for fighting fair about money. First, don't hit below the belt. If you know your partner feels deeply humiliated over losing his job, then you must never ever use this to your advantage in a fight. If you know your mate still cries over the money her sister stole, then you must not rub her nose in it. If you even suspect that your mate is deeply, mortally sensitive on a certain topic, then no matter how mad you get, don't touch it. You wouldn't say something hurtful about your loved one's failing grades in high school or the ugly burn on her back, so don't bring up old hurtful things when you fight over money. Even when you get mad, there are limits. The second thing is don't blame your partner for joint decisions. If you signed your name on the mortgage, then it's too late to attack your partner for getting a bad deal on the house. It may have been your partner's idea to buy, but the moment you agree to go along with it, you forfeited the right to blame your partner if things don't work out. If a joint deal goes south, then own up to your half of the bum decision. And I'll come back to this after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Coming back to fighting fair. Don't make giant generalizations. Calling names or making sweeping statements like, you always spend too much, or you are never careful with money, is not nice. Moreover, it isn't even true. Whatever dumb thing your mate did, there are at least 1,000 other dumb things your mate didn't do, right? It may sound silly, but he didn't buy a pet rhinoceros, and she didn't use your stock certificates for toilet paper, and he didn't tell his boss to go skydiving without a parachute. Sweeping statements about how someone always overspends or is never careful aren't true, but they can sure transform something small into something huge. Those words can turn a minor spat into a raging battle quicker than spit hits the ground. So just hold your tongue because you can't take it back. Another important point is don't take every difference as a personal insult. Differences about money are not intended as a tax. If he doesn't want to spend a lot of money on fresh flowers, they just die. It doesn't mean he doesn't love you. If she thinks takeout is essential, I'm a lousy cook, it doesn't mean she doesn't care about you. Sometimes money decisions are just about money, not an expression of your innermost soul. Take the sting out of differences by recognizing they are just that, differences. One of you likes imported perfume, the other likes the smell of soap. One of you likes French wine, the other prefers Budweiser. So what? Proving you are right about how money should be spent is a victory that will turn to ashes in your throat. Acknowledge differences and move on. Now we're up to rule number 7, divide and conquer. Financial responsibility means sharing the decision making and sharing the responsibility. It does not, however, mean that you have to share the chores equally. Let's face it, you and your partner have different temperaments and different talents. One of you is organized, one couldn't find his car keys if they were strapped to his hand. One has a head for numbers, the other can't add 2 + 2 with a calculator and doubts the answer even then. And one of you is fascinated by finance, or at least mildly interested, while the other experiences a wave of nausea every time the business news comes on. A few decades after marriage, your roles tend to sort out on their own. But if you're in a new relationship, divvying up the chores can be a lot more complicated, especially if you aren't married and your financial lives are still separate. So here are a few tips for dividing and conquering when your money is mostly separate. Start by deciding how much you will each contribute to the joint expenses. If your income is a lot higher or lower than your partner's, consider using the balanced money formula we've gone over in the past as a guideline. That way, you both contribute the same percentage of your income to the must-haves, you both keep the same percentage for wants, and so forth. Next, decide how to divvy up the chores. Unmarried couples often decide that since they're splitting the expenses 50-50 or so, they should split the chores 50-50. But remember, financial chores are no different than all the other chores around the house. One of you may be better than the other. If your partner turns green when faced with the checkbook, don't fight it. Just ask him or her to take out the trash while you pay the bills. Just remember, you are not going to change the scatterbrained sweetheart into the organization king or queen. You're not going to infuse your happy hippie with a lot of money. So instead of trying to split all the financial chores 50-50, divide responsibilities in a way that makes sense. If he is more organized, then he should keep the records. If she likes to negotiate, then she should shop for the car. And if you are the only one willing to do what it takes to get your money into balance, then just do it. You are both 100% responsible, but you can't each do 100% of the tasks. Do what makes sense for you. And the last rule, the eighth rule, is learn the art of compromise. You are doing your honest-to-goodness best to have a happy, healthy money relationship, and yet you still disagree. Not on the little stuff, but the big things. The stuff you can't just cover with fun money. She wants a bigger house. He thinks it's time for a new car. These are really big decisions, and no amount of good intentions can make them go away. What then? First, keep talking. Talk is cheap, so when it comes to the big expenditures, a car, a mortgage, childcare, retirement investments, start talking and keep on talking. Watch out for whatever you think, or I've got it all under control. That's the fast road to I told you so, and the mess is all your fault. One of the nice things about big decisions is that there can be a lot to talk about. Keep the conversation going over time. Look up some studies in Consumer Reports and ask your friends about their purchases. Bring more information back to the table and open another conversation. Once you get it open, keep talking until you both feel 100% responsible for the final decision. Also, put time on your side. Sometimes it's just a matter of timing. A nice vacation this year, remodel the kitchen next year. The kids need more room now, but there will be a nicer car down the road. Can you layer the things you want over time? Instead of saying it is a vacation or a new sofa, decide that you will save for both. You get something and your partner gets something. Sure, it will take longer, but you recognize that both of you have legitimate wants and you can work together for them. That realization is priceless. And lastly, focus on the big picture. What if you are still squabbling? Keep an eye on the big picture. Even if you can't agree on everything, there are some very big things you can agree on. You both want to keep a roof over your heads, of course. You both want to grow old in comfort and dignity, even if you don't agree on how much money to put in your retirement account. You both want to ensure your children's safety. You both want to stop fighting, and you both want to stop worrying about money. Kind of puts your disagreements into perspective, huh? When a relationship has become bruised over the subject of money, reminding yourself of the common ground can be healing. Money can be the hardest kind of intimacy. Money is wrapped up in attitudes and values shaped from infancy. Some people say we always put Edgar in designer outfits because a child who looks good feels better about himself. Or we never wasted money on fancy clothes because kids just grow out of them. It sometimes feels as if everything we stand for can be expressed in terms of how we spend our money. Negotiating the shoals of money intimacy can be as difficult as anything you will ever face together. The differences between you and your partner can be subtle and hard to interpret, and the landmines are everywhere. Worse yet, money issues are pervasive. Even if you never talk about money, you will develop a money relationship for better or for worse. Whether you discuss it every day or shroud it in silence, you and your mate will decide who works, who spends, who pays, which bills, how much debt you carry, and how much you save, all of which forms your money relationship. Every money relationship can be made better. No matter where you're starting from, it really is possible to improve the role that money plays in your relationship. So give it a try. Even if you're not convinced that all of these ideas will work in your relationship, give it an honest effort. Get on the path to balancing your money. Get on the path to the joyful, fulfilling, reward relationship that you and your partner deserve. And I'll come back after station identification. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you are listening to Life and Debt, your practical education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So now let's look at a new topic, the big buy, purchasing the home that is right for you. Home ownership. a little patch of earth all your own. Or for condo owners, a little patch of the sky that's all your own. When you own your own home, you could do it your way. Paint the walls bright orange, or build a car walk on the roof, or convert the backyard into a skateboard park. It is entirely up to you. As Robert Frost said, home is a place where they have to take you in. There is nothing on God's earth quite like sinking your toes into a bit of grass that is all yours. Not the landlord's, not your parents', but yours. Entire books have been written on home buying. All Your Worth isn't one of those books, and it's not possible in this program to cover everything you could possibly want to know about buying a home. Instead, we're here really to just answer one question. How do you buy a home while making the most of all your worth? We'll look at All Your Worth rules for smart, happy home buying. Whether you're buying your first home or your fifth, if you think there may be a moving van in your future, then the rules we'll go over are for you. They've boiled down into 5 rules for smart, happy home buying. I'll go over them first. They are, in summary, pay off your steal for tomorrow debt before you buy. Number 2 is save until you have at least 10% for down payment. 20% is even better. 3, buy a home you can afford. 4, get the cheapest mortgage. And 5, buy a home that makes you smile. Now we'll look at each of these individually. The first rule being pay off your steal from tomorrow debt before you buy. If you still have credit card and other steal from tomorrow debt, get that paid off before you buy a new home. This is the best way to get yourself on the right financial footing, so you will be completely ready to take on the financial responsibilities of home ownership or the responsibilities of a bigger mortgage. If this advice makes your heart sink because you think, oh no, that means it will be years before we can buy, then take it as a sign. There is a message beaming your way, and you need to hear it loud and clear. You cannot afford to buy a house right now. There's a hole in the bottom of your boat, and now is not the time to add the weight of a mortgage. Let's look at a story of a single mom. She was really anxious to get her son, Eugene, out of an apartment and into a real home, a place with grass and nice kids next door. Her name is Karina. Karina had a good job as a claims adjuster, but her credit card debt, along with a couple of late payments and a dispute over a water bill, had bruised her credit score. And she didn't have 2 nickels saved for a down payment. Even so, she got a real estate agent to show her dozens of houses, and she finally found one she was crazy about. The mortgage company was glad to offer financing, but they wanted 14.75% interest, more than double the going rate for people with good credit. When Karina heard that, she cried for days. She said, "No way can I pay that, and now I'm going to lose that house, and my boy's never going to have a yard." But then my mom said, "What are you bawling about? You act like that's the last house in the whole world." I was kind of mad, but really, there's no one like your mom to knock sense into you. Karina swung into action. She got her mom to keep Eugene 2 weekends a month while she took extra shifts at the office, putting every extra dollar into paying off her debts. She got dead serious about paying off her credit card balance, and then she started saving for a down payment. 26 months later, she called her real estate agent back. "I said, this time I'm ready. Show me my house. And you know what? I found something I liked a lot more. It was even better." Paying off your steal from tomorrow debts will put money in your pocket. When the debt is paid off, all the money that was going to monthly payments will be yours, not Capital One's. Getting rid of those debts will make your credit score rise, which means you will qualify for a better interest rate on your mortgage. As Karina learned, that can add up to hundreds of dollars that stay in your pocket every single month. And there's one more reason to pay off your steal from tomorrow debt before you go house hunting. You'll be safer. Without all those debts, you will have a lot more flexibility in your budget if anything goes wrong. You'll be able to focus on getting your house payments made and not have to worry about Visa, MasterCard, JCPenney, or the IOU to Uncle Roy. So what should you do? The answer is follow Karina. Pull up your socks and get that debt paid off $1 at a time. Every time you pay off some steal from tomorrow debt, say out loud, I am one step closer to owning my own home. And when you get there, you'll be so, so glad you bought your home with a clean slate. So again, pay off your steal from tomorrow debt before you buy the home. The next rule is save until you have at least 10% for a down payment, and it's better if it's 20%. Sure, there are plenty of lenders who will give you a mortgage with no money down, and there is no shortage of people who will stand on a soapbox and tell you this is smart. But here's something that those no money down guys don't tell you. 100% financing costs more, a lot more. Buyers who have no down payments are often classified as subprime, which means they pay the highest interest rates, the highest fees, and they get stuck with high-priced mortgage insurance. If Karina had bought her a house with no money down, her monthly payment would have been $1,870 a month, $1,870 instead of just $1,005. That's an extra $865 a month. In 30 years, she would have paid $309,000 more on the no money down mortgage, enough for her son's college, four brand new cars, and a good start on retirement for herself. Think of it this way. If you buy a house with no money down, the house isn't more valuable, but you will end up paying a heck of a lot more for it. This is a little like going shopping and deciding to buy from the store that charges the most. And there is one more thing the no money down crowd won't tell you. People who buy a house with no money down are up to 20 times more likely to lose their home in foreclosure. Just imagine what that would have meant to someone like Karina. She would have moved into a house that she loved, only to be moved out when the sheriff showed up to dump her things on the lawn and auction her home to the highest bidder. She would have lost all her payments, ruined her credit for years to come, and said goodbye to the vegetable garden and the kids in the neighborhood. There are a lot of financial steps that can hurt, but few hurt as much as being forced to turn your house over to the bank. You may be thinking, but nice, hard-working people never lose their homes in foreclosure. Guess again. Over the past 35 years, the home mortgage foreclosure rates across this country have tripled, pushing on quadrupling. When All Your Worth was published a decade ago, 800,000 homeowners filed for bankruptcy in a last-ditch attempt to hold on to their homes. That number is higher now. And for every family suffering through a foreclosure or bankruptcy, there were many more who handed the keys over to the bank and quietly moved out just to keep the word foreclosure and bankruptcy off their credit records. It's happening today in your own town. People try to keep it quiet, but don't let that fool you. Good, hardworking people can get upside down financially and lose their homes. And it is much more likely to happen to people who took out mortgages that had no down payments, mortgages that were at high interest rates, and mortgages that were too big to fit into a balanced money plan. So play it safe and save until you have a sizable down payment. This will make your home a whole lot more affordable and a lot more secure. It will also mean that you own a big piece of equity right from day one. And with the 20% savings for tomorrow, you'll get there sooner than you might think. The down payment will be your first step toward making your home the best part of your long-term plan to create a lifetime of wealth. And we'll continue in the next program. This is Iowa bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.